Time is the friend of the wonderful business, the enemy of the mediocre.
Yeah.
That's the classic Warren Buffett quote, right? It gets passed around finance circles like a holy relic.
Right. You see it at the top of pitch decks. You hear it in quarterly letters.
Exactly. It's essentially the default mantra for anyone who buys a stock and decides not to sell it for a year. We all nod along because intuitively it makes sense.
A good company compounds, a bad company unravels.
Right. But there is a massive gap between, you know, quoting that aphorism and actually understanding the mechanics behind it. Like, how do you map time mathematically onto a company's DNA?
Yeah, and that gap between intuition and mechanics is exactly where most investors lose the thread.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to treat time as this uniform passive backdrop. The assumption is that you buy an asset, you put it in a drawer, and time just washes over it.
Just does the work for you.
Right. But when you get into the deep physics of compounding, time isn't a waiting room. It's an active, measurable dimension. It's a force that interacts with different business models in entirely different ways.
Which brings us to our focus today for this deep dive. We are unpacking a piece of writing that fundamentally rethinks this entire dynamic.
It's a fantastic piece.
It really is. The post is titled Duration Revisited, From A Plus B to A Times B. It's written by Jocelyn Dubay as part of a broader project called The Infinite Investor.
Specifically within his Averaging Up series.
Yes, exactly. And what Dubay is doing here is rare. He's stepping away from standard equity analysis. I mean, he isn't looking at next quarter's guidance or dissecting a balance sheet.
No, he's building a framework from first principles.
Right. Borrowing heavily from thermodynamics, systems theory, and physics to figure out what actually drives wealth creation over decades. And for you listening, we should define the stakes here early on.
Yeah, this isn't a tactical playbook for your brokerage account next Monday.
Definitely not. We aren't here to debate whether the Fed is going to cut rates or if some tech stock is overvalued.
This is about establishing a foundational vocabulary. Dubay's framework is designed to completely alter the lens through which you view the companies you already own.
The shift is subtle but profound. You stop looking at what a company builds and you start looking at the underlying invisible forces that propel it.
The structural forces.
Right. So the blueprint for our journey today. First, we have to rescue the concept of duration from the bond market.
Long overdue.
Seriously. Second, we need to understand Dubay's vocabulary of A and B forces in a business. Third, we'll make the leap from additive growth, which is human-built, to multiplicative growth, driven by natural laws.
And finally, we'll explore what he calls the gradient and how this dictates the evolution of the greatest investors.
So let's start with duration, the traditional definition. This is usually where equity investors just completely tune out.
Oh, absolutely. Because in fixed income, Macaulay duration is a highly precise mathematical measure. It tells you the weighted average time until you receive your cash flows.
Right.
Short duration means you get your money back quickly, so you're less exposed to interest rate swings.
Cash now.
Cash now. And long duration means the bulk of your return is way out in the future, making the bond highly sensitive to the macro environment along the way. Cash later.
It's rigid, it's contractual, and it works perfectly for debt.
But applying that to living, breathing equities is where the traditional models just hit a wall.
Yeah, because in a standard discounted cash flow model, we try to mimic bond math. We project cash flows out 5 or 10 years, slap a terminal value on the end, and discount it back.
Which is deeply flawed because an equity isn't a contract, it's an organism.
Exactly. Dubay argues that bond math completely misses the nature of the time involved in equities. So he introduces a new taxonomy to describe when the cash arrives. Let's get into the vocabulary of time.
Right. He breaks the DNA of every business down into two fundamental forces, force A and force B.
Let's start with force A.
Force A is the short duration component. This is the existing operation, the established moat, the recurring revenue. When a business relies on Force A, the cash is arriving right now. The present day economics are tangible.
And as Dubay writes, he points to companies he calls stalwarts as pure expressions of Force A.
Like Walmart.
Right. Walmart, Coca-Cola, McDonald's. They aren't trying to invent a new paradigm or conquer some adjacent industry. They dominate their current universe.
They generate billions in free cash flow today.
And they return it today via dividends and buybacks. They are optimizing the present. So they are the equity equivalent of a short duration bond.
Exactly. But then you have the other side of the ledger, which is force B. This is the long duration component.
The secular expansion.
Right. It's the secular expansion of an addressable market.
Huh.
It's the aggressive reinvestment of earnings, the sprawling R&D pipelines, speculative bets on new tech.
With force B, the cash doesn't arrive today.
No, it arrives much later. You're buying the future.
An early stage biotech firm with no approved drugs, or a hyper-growth software company running at a massive operating loss just to capture market share. These are pure force B.
Dubé categorizes them as growth engines. Their entire valuation rests on distant cash flows that haven't materialized yet.
But, you know, categorizing companies into cash now and cash later isn't exactly a revolution in finance. Value versus growth is an ancient debate.
It is. But where Dubé's framework becomes incredibly potent is his synthesis of how we evaluate that force B.
Right.
The vast majority of Wall Street analysts spend their careers trying to model the size of force B.
Yeah, they argue over whether a company will grow at 15% or 20% a year for the next decade. They obsess over the top line projection.
But Dubé flips the lens. He argues that the critical variable isn't the size of the growth. It's the cost of that growth.
The cost of B. This is such a huge unlock.
It really is. If a company has to pour billions of dollars into capital expenditures, hire armies of engineers, and constantly acquire competitors just to maintain its growth rate,
then that force B is incredibly expensive.
Exactly. It might be large, but it carries a massive cost of capital and an enormous burden of execution.
And this idea of the cost of B sets the foundation for the next major leap in the framework. Because the companies that dominate our global indices, the megacaps, they don't just have force A or force B.
They have both.
Right. Dubé calls this dual duration. The cash arrives now and the cash arrives later. This is the additive world, A plus B.
I think it's helpful for you listening to picture this as two distinct engines running side by side inside the same corporate structure.
The two engines analogy is great.
You have a mature, highly profitable engine generating a river of cash today. That's engine A.
Yeah.
And sitting right next to it, you have a second engine that takes that cash and incinerates it in the pursuit of future dominance. That's engine B.
Let's ground this in the real world. Dubé provides some phenomenal case studies for the A plus B model. Let's start with the canonical example, Berkshire Hathaway.
Berkshire is arguably the purest historical example of this. The entire conglomerate is built on this dual engine architecture.
So what's the A engine there?
The A engine at Berkshire is their insurance float, GEICO, National Indemnity, along with their massive physical subsidiaries like the BNSF Railroad and Berkshire Hathaway Energy.
Mature, heavily moated cash printing machines.
Exactly. They represent massive short duration. They generate billions of dollars, regardless of what the broader market is doing.
But the magic of Berkshire isn't just that they have those assets. It's what Warren Buffett does with the cash those assets produce. Yeah.
That river of capital flows into the B engine.
Buffett and his team act as the allocators, taking the short duration cash and deploying it into long duration bets, acquiring new businesses, building the equity portfolio.
It's a closed loop system where A funds B. But notice the structure. They are separate activities. The railroad runs the trains. The allocation team buys the stocks. They're bolted together by the holding company structure, but operationally, they're completely distinct.
Amazon operates on the exact same additive principle, just with a different flavor of technology.
Amazon is a fantastic A plus B mapping.
So their A engine is AWS and advertising.
Yes. Amazon Web Services is the utility grid of the internet. It generates staggering amounts of free cash flow today. But Amazon historically hasn't just sat on that cash or paid a dividend.
They funnel it directly into their B engine, which is their relentless physical expansion.
They take the AWS cash and use it to build out millions of square feet of physical fulfillment centers, robotic logistics, satellite internet like Project Kuiper.
AI infrastructure.
All of it.
Alphabet is another classic A plus B architecture. Google Search and YouTube are the A engine. They have a virtual monopoly on digital intent, printing cash with almost zero marginal cost.
And that cash is continuously siphoned off to fund the other bets segment, the B engine. Waymo's autonomous driving, DeepMind, life sciences.
Highly speculative, massive capital sinks aimed at solving long-duration problems. In every one of these examples, the relationship is purely additive. One side of the house makes the money, the other side spends it.
The short duration sustains the long duration. And when it works, it creates the most valuable companies on Earth.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Dubé highlights a profound vulnerability buried at the heart of this A plus B model.
Yes, he calls this structure mechanical duration.
Mechanical duration. And the defining characteristic here is that it must be deliberately built, maintained, and directed by human beings.
This is where the framework forces you to think about the fragility of leadership. The B engine in an additive company doesn't run on autopilot. It requires continuous, flawless human execution.
Let's talk about the human cost of that.
Think about the burden placed on management in these companies. Every single day, capital must be allocated correctly.
Jeff Bezos, or now Andy Jassy, has to look at the cash coming out of AWS and actively decide, okay, we need to build 20 new fulfillment centers in Europe.
And we need to pivot our logistics to this specific robotic standard.
And spend $10 billion on custom AI chips.
Right. And if they guess wrong on the macro environment, or if a competitor out-executes them, that B engine stalls.
Or look at Alphabet. Sundar Pichai has to decide how many billions to burn on Waymo while dealing with the innovator's dilemma in Core Search.
Or Buffett at Berkshire. For 60 years, the B engine has relied entirely on his idiosyncratic genius for capital allocation. The human cost is staggering.
So for the listener, consider the fragility here. Mechanical duration is incredibly fragile because it is wholly dependent on human perfection.
If you have an A plus B company and the visionary founder leaves or the CEO loses their edge, the growth trajectory can collapse almost overnight.
Amazon without Bezos is a fundamentally different company.
Exactly. As Dubé points out, the B in these companies is constructed. It requires massive CapEx, bloated R&D, and exhausting management bandwidth.
So when you own an operational compounder, which is what Dubé calls these A plus B giants, you are implicitly betting that the human beings at the helm will not make a catastrophic mistake.
You're betting the mechanics of the engine won't break down. It's a high anxiety bet.
Which is why Dubé introduces a massive paradigm shift here. If mechanical duration is an engine that requires constant fuel and human maintenance, what happens when we look for a business model that doesn't require an engine at all?
This is the leap from the additive world of A plus B to the multiplicative world of A times B.
We are crossing the chasm from mechanical duration to what Dubé calls physical duration. Let's unpack this.
The shift from addition to multiplication implies that the two forces are no longer separate. They aren't bolted together, they are fused.
To illustrate this, Dubé uses Visa, and it is arguably the most elegant masterclass in business model dissection I've seen.
It really is. Because if you look at Visa purely through the lens of what they do today, they look exactly like a stalwart.
Just a mature, force company.
Right. Visa is an information toll booth. They sit in the middle of the global financial system and collect a fraction of a cent every time a piece of data moves from a merchant to a bank.
The margins are astronomical.
They generate over $20 billion a year in free cash flow, returning a massive portion to shareholders. It is the ultimate force A, pure short duration. Cash arriving constantly, right now.
But Visa isn't just a mature, stalwart treading water, it's a massive growth engine. So the question becomes, where is their force B? Where is the long duration coming from? And more importantly, how much is it costing them?
This is the core of physical duration. Visa's force B is the secular global migration of transactions from physical cash to digital payments.
It's a free wave.
The free wave. Depending on the region, a massive percentage of global commerce is still done in paper money. Every single year, a percentage of that cash economy migrates onto digital rails. That migration is the wave carrying Visa forward.
But crucially, Visa does not pay for this digitalization. The cost of B is effectively zero.
Think about the sheer amount of capital required to digitize the global economy. It's measured in the trillions. But who is spending that money?
Not Visa.
Not Visa. The local banks are spending capital to manufacture credit cards, issue them, and handle the localized risk. Retailers are spending capital to upgrade point-of-sale systems.
Tech companies like Apple and Google are spending billions developing mobile wallet infrastructure.
Governments are pushing legislation to force cashless economies to reduce shadow markets.
The entire planet is actively working at its own immense expense to digitize payments for 100 different localized reasons. And Visa. Visa just sits perfectly still in the center of the river.
As the river widens, more water naturally flows through their toll booth.
As Dubé writes, the wave is free. And because it's free, the dynamic between A and B changes entirely. They are fused, not bolted.
They are no longer two separate activities. Visa doesn't take its toll revenue from today and invest it in building the digital wave of tomorrow. The toll is the wave.
Let's pause on that because it's the conceptual hinge of the whole piece. In the Amazon model, AWS and the logistics network are two different things. You could spin AWS off tomorrow into an independent company, and it would function perfectly.
But with Visa, you cannot separate the short-duration cash flow from the long-duration growth.
You can't separate them because they are the exact same activity viewed at two different time horizons. A single tap of a credit card at a grocery store is a short-duration event. Visa collects its toll today. That's force A.
But that exact same tap is simultaneously the physical expression of a long-duration secular trend. The irreversible shift from cash to digital, that's force B, they are fused. A multiplied by B.
And because they are fused, the growth cannot fail due to a bad management decision. This is why Dubé calls it physical duration. It relies on natural forces rather than human decisions.
The physics analogy here is crucial. Dubé leans into thermodynamics, specifically the concept of irreversibility. In physics, entropy dictates that a closed system moves toward disorder. Heat flows from hot to cold. A shattered glass doesn't reassemble itself. In economics, certain secular trends share that thermodynamic irreversibility.
A society that moves from carrying heavy bags of silver coins to paper bills to plastic cards to biometric mobile wallets does not suddenly decide to go back to carrying heavy bags of silver coins.
The friction has been permanently removed from the system. The trend is exogenous. It comes from outside the company. No CEO at Visa sat in a boardroom in 1995 and personally engineered the global adoption of the internet and mobile phones.
The wave arrived uninvited.
And it cannot be stopped by a competitor's product launch. The growth is structural.
Which introduces Dubé's term for this specific species of company, the free surfer.
It's the perfect imagery.
It really is. An A plus B company is a massive cargo ship. It requires millions of gallons of diesel, a massive crew, constant navigation, and brutal maintenance just to move forward. If the engines stop, the ship stops.
But a free surfer is just a person standing on a board. The energy propelling them forward is the ocean itself.
The growth is structural, exogenous, and irreversible. Visa, without its CEO, is the exact same company. It is an information toll booth riding a wave it didn't create.
So we have this stark contrast between mechanical duration, expensive, constructed, fragile, human-dependent, and physical duration-free, structural, irreversible, natural.
This naturally leads us to the taxonomy of duration. Dubé organizes the entire market into a hierarchy. Four levels. Let's map this out for the listener.
Picture a vertical hierarchy. At the absolute bottom, level one, we have the stalwarts.
Pure force A, short duration only. Cash no, no B Walmart.
Right. Level two, moving one rung up, we find the growth engines.
Pure force B, long duration only, execution dependent, cash later.
Early stage software, biotech. The equation is just B, and that B is highly mechanical. The mortality rate here is exceptionally high.
Level three, which is the sterling for most of the corporate world, the operational compounders.
The dual additive model. A plus B, cash now, funding the build out of cash later. Amazon, Alphabet. They carry the immense burden of mechanical duration, human dependent.
And finally, level four, the free surfers.
The dual multiplicative model. A times B cash now, multiplied by a free, exogenous wave of growth, natural law dependent.
Visa, MasterCard, and a few others that fit this incredibly narrow profile. Companies like MSCI, S&P Global, and Moody's.
Let's look at S&P Global and MSCI because they perfectly illustrate the A times B dynamic in a different context. Their force A is that they are the architects of the world's financial benchmarks.
If you want to launch an ETF or benchmark a mutual fund, you have to pay S&P a licensing fee. It is a toll on the flow of global capital, pure short-duration cash flow.
And their force B, the free irreversible wave. It's the structural multi-decade shift from active mutual funds to passive index investing.
For the last 30 years, trillions of dollars have migrated from high-fee active managers into low-fee ETFs tracking indices. And S&P Global didn't pay to create that migration.
John Bogle and Vanguard spent decades evangelizing passive investing. Academic finance proved active managers underperform. The ecosystem pushed capital toward passive vehicles for its own reasons.
And every time a dollar moves from an active fund to an S&P 500 index fund, S&P Global gets a tiny cut. They don't market the fund. They don't manage the assets. They just collect the toll on the wave.
It is an exogenous thermodynamic flow of capital, completely free to the toll booth operator.
Moody's operates on a similar principle, just as a toll booth on corporate debt issuance. The expansion of global credit is the exogenous wave.
Understanding this four-part taxonomy is crucial because it allows Dubé to introduce another massive concept from his broader Infinite Investor series, the gradient.
This is where the physics analogies really lock into place. In physics, a gradient describes the directional flow of energy or matter.
Water flows down a gravity gradient. Heat flows down a thermal gradient. These flows are natural and relentless.
Dubay argues that a similar gradient exists in the financial markets. But instead of gravity or heat, it involves the flow of capital and the cost of growth.
Capital naturally seeks efficiency. Over time, it is relentlessly pulled away from high-cost, execution-dependent growth mechanical duration and flows upward toward zero-cost, structural growth physical duration.
The gradient is the unseen force pulling the market toward A times B. As you ascend this hierarchy, your risk profile fundamentally changes.
The dependence on human decisions decreases, and the dependence on structural forces increases. At the very top, the investor's role approaches zero.
Which opens up a fascinating dimension of Dubay's work, because it isn't just capital that moves up this gradient. The greatest human investors evolve along this exact same trajectory. Their career arcs mirror the taxonomy.
From builder to surfer, it's a completely consistent pattern among the greats.
Let's talk about the Chris Hahn example. He's a billionaire investor who runs TCI Fund Management, and he is living this exact framework out in real time.
If you look at Hahn's early career, he was deeply invested in highly complex capital-intensive businesses, massive positions in companies like GE Aerospace or major railways.
The ultimate expressions of mechanical duration. A railway requires billions of dollars every year just replacing wooden ties and steel rails so the trains don't derail.
The capex required merely to stand still is staggering. High cost B.
But as Hahn evolved, he aggressively migrated his capital away from those mechanical businesses. He moved his chips toward companies that require almost zero capital expenditure to grow.
He bought heavily into Visa, Moody's, S&P Global.
He moved from physical assets that require brutal human maintenance to digital toll booths that ride free secular waves. He ascended from A plus B to A times B.
He recognized that physical duration is mathematically and structurally superior.
We see the exact same 50-year arc with Warren Buffett. The narrative is that he just buys good companies and holds them forever, but his actual evolution is a masterclass in climbing the gradient.
He literally started at the very bottom. Berkshire Hathaway was a failing textile mill in New England, a dying force A with no force B. Terrible duration.
So he adapted. He used the dying cash flows to buy insurance companies. He created the float. He bought the railroad. He ascended to the A plus B level,
becoming the greatest architect of mechanical duration in history.
But look at his final act. Look at where the vast majority of Berkshire's equity value sits today. Apple, which has increasingly transitioned into a digital toll booth on attention and services.
And his massive multi-decade holdings of American Express and Visa, he moved toward the free surfers.
The gradient pulls on everyone, even Buffett. Duration is simply how we measure the distance traveled. And this evolution fundamentally alters the psychological reality of being an investor.
Yes, it is a shift from vigilance to patience.
This connects directly to your life and attention span as an investor. Think about the psychological state required to maintain a portfolio of mechanical duration. Dubay calls this archetype the racer.
The racer is constantly gripping the steering wheel, hyper aware of track conditions, competitors, wear on the tires.
If your portfolio is full of A plus B compounders, your default state is anxiety. Every quarter is a test of management.
You're parsing the CEO's tone on a conference call to see if they're hiding a structural flaw in the B engine. The portfolio demands your constant, undivided attention.
But when you ascend the gradient and build a portfolio around physical duration, A times B free surfers, the psychological demands evaporate. The attention cost drops to near zero.
You shift from being an active stock picker, the racer, to a passive observer of natural laws, what Dubay calls the mountain guide.
A mountain guide doesn't try to manage the weather or build the mountain. They observe the natural laws and allow the environment to do the heavy lifting. A portfolio of free surfers requires only patience.
It doesn't need to be babysat.
Which brings us to the philosophical climax of the piece, the ultimate question and the convergence.
Every mental model we use in finance is ultimately just a tool designed to answer a specific question. Different frameworks prioritize different threats.
For instance, as Dubay writes, ergodicity asks, can I survive this? It's about avoiding catastrophic losses. Survival precedes returns.
And the power law, which governs venture capital, asks, am I exposed to the winners?
But duration, as Dubay has redefined it, asks a fundamentally different question. Duration asks, when does the cash arrive and who controls its arrival?
That second half, who controls its arrival, is the breakthrough. Does the future cash arrive because a brilliant CEO successfully engineered a highly complex mechanical system? Or does it arrive because an irreversible thermodynamic law of economics delivered it to the doorstep for free?
Built versus received, mechanical versus physical.
If the growth is built by humans, the investor must serve the portfolio. But if the growth is delivered by natural laws, the dynamic flips entirely. The portfolio serves the investor.
Which sets up the destination of the gradient. If capital is pulled from A plus B to A times B, and if A times B requires absolutely no human intervention, what is the ultimate endpoint?
Dubé calls this final state the convergence. The destination is immobility.
Immobility. The hardest thing for an intelligent investor to do is absolutely nothing. Let's frame this within the broader averaging up framework. Dubé organizes a portfolio into four buckets.
Bucket one is cash, for safety. Bucket two is the index, for market growth. Bucket three contains the compounders, the active wealth engines. And bucket four contains amplifiers, for asymmetric acceleration.
But as you ascend the gradient toward pure free surfers, those buckets eventually collapse upward. A true free surfer absorbs the functions of the entire portfolio.
Visa generates such immense, predictable cash flow. It provides its own bucket one safety buffer. It's so embedded in global capital, it acts as its own bucket two index.
It's the ultimate bucket three compounder. And because its growth is multiplicative and completely free, it provides its own bucket four asymmetric acceleration.
The convergence is the moment the buckets collapse into a single point. Activity completely ceases.
The portfolio no longer needs the investor. The compounding simply continues, driven by natural laws, and time becomes the only necessary multiplier.
The active, anxious stock picker has become truly infinite. Time is the friend of the wonderful business, because time is simply the vehicle through which the irreversible wave delivers free growth to the toll booth.
We have covered an immense amount of ground today, but before we wrap up, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final provocative thought to mull over, drawing on the edges of Dubé's framework.
It's an important caveat.
It is. If physical duration relies on irreversible secular waves, like the digitalization of payments or the shift to passive investing, what happens when that wave finally crests? Dubé acknowledges that every model has limits.
Like a sigmoid plateau where a trend finally saturates.
Exactly. Eventually, 99% of all global transactions will be digital. The migration will be complete. So the existential question is, how do you identify the exact moment a free surfer's wave hits that plateau? And does that mean the free surfer inevitably devolves back into a mere stalwart?
It is the ultimate test of physical duration. The laws of nature guarantee the power of the wave, but they also guarantee that every wave eventually meets the shore.
Something to explore on your own as you look at your portfolio. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. This is Averaging Up the Infinite Investor by Jocelyn Dubé.